We, the undersigned, being personally acquainted with the family of Joseph Smith Sr., with whom the celebrated Gold Bible so-called originated, state that they were not only lazy, indolent set of men, but also intemperate, and their word was not to be depended on, that they were glad to be dispensed of society. Pardon Butts, that sounds like a fake name, Warden Reed, Hiram Smith, Alfred Stafford, and a bunch of other people.
The testimony of Isaac Hale. I first became acquainted with Joseph Smith Jr. in November 1825. He was at that time in the employ of a set of men who were called money diggers, and his occupation was that of seeing, or pretending to see, by means of a stone placed in his hat, and his hat closed over his face. In this way, he pretended to discover minerals and hidden treasures. After these occurrences, young Smith made several visits at my house, and at length asked my consent to marrying my daughter, Emma. This I refused, and gave my reasons for so doing, some of which were that he was a stranger and followed a business that I could not approve, and then he left the place. Not long after this, he returned, and while I was absent from home, carried off my daughter into the state of New York, where they were married without my approbation or consent.
After this, I was informed they had brought a wonderful book of plates down with them.
I was shown a box in which it said they were contained, which had, to all appearances, been used as a glass box of the common window glass. I was allowed to feel the weight of the box, and they gave me to understand that the book of plates were then in the box, into which, however, I was not allowed to look. I inquired of Joseph Smith, Jr., who was to be the first who would be allowed to see the book of plates, and he said it was a young child. After this, I became dissatisfied and informed him that if there was anything in my house of that description which I could not be allowed to see, he must take it away. If he did not, I was determined to see it. After that, the plates were said to be hid in the woods.
The manner in which he pretended to read and interpret was the same as when he looked for the money diggers with the stone in his hat and the hat over his face, while the book of plates was at the same time hid in the woods. The whole Book of Mormon, so-called, is a silly fabrication of falsehood and wickedness, got up for speculation and with a design to dupe the credulous and unwary, and in order that its fabricators may live upon the spoils of those who swallow the deception. Isaac Hale. Affirm to and subscribe before me, March 20th, 1834, Charles Diamond, Justice of the Peace.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today's minisode is all about pimping a new project that I've been working on. It's called Early Mormon Audio, and the intros that you just heard are from Isaac Hale's testimony of Joseph Smith from The History of the Saints by John C. Bennett, or actually it's from Mormonism Unveiled, which Bennett uses to illustrate the character of Joseph Smith. Anyway, like I said, my new project is called Early Mormon Audio, and you can find it. I've got a website up now. I've got several episodes up. It's earlymormonaudio.com. You can find it on iTunes if you search for Early Mormon Audio.
And we've got a Facebook page.
And my goal is essentially to build, over time, a diverse audio library with all of these old Mormon works from the public domain. Right, Matt? Matt, is that what you understand?
What's your new project, Glenn?
It's called Early Mormon Audio.
And why didn't you trust it to produce it through Infants? It had to be something separate.
You know,
yeah, what's the trust issues about, Glenn?
No, but seriously, I want this to be something that isn't tainted by biased commentary. You know? So like we've got a good audience in it, but it's a niche audience. And what I want to do with Early Mormon Audio is kind of like what we did with the Lowry letters, what we did with that deromancing the stone. It's actually an idea that John Larson had back in the Mormon Expression days, but he was going to publicly outsource it and have people read different chapters of these public domain books and create an audio library, like an online library, which I thought was an awesome idea. And I don't know if anybody ever really did anything with it or not. But so when we read those things, I thought, I want to do this. And so I'm starting with John C. Bennett's History of the Saints, and I've got about 4 hours of reading, which is about up to 91 pages of like a 365 page thing.
You're doing reading?
Huh?
You're doing all the reading yourself?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
So how are you? Yeah.
Oh, that particular source, though, you like want to do selections, right? I mean, because he's he repeats a lot of crap.
In the first 40 pages, like 35 pages are just different people saying what a great guy he is, right? I picked maybe three or four selective, and said, you know, this is going to be an abridged selection here. But and I debated because the part that I just finished reading was when he pulls out excerpts from Mormonism Unveiled. And at first I started reading it and I'm like, oh man, no, I'm not going to read this. I'll just summarize
Mormonism Unveiled later.
Yeah, right. But you know, but then I decided to do it. Okay. And I'm so glad that I did, because there's things in there that I didn't know. Like I've read all the books, but
Mormonism Unveiled is really pretty interesting. You know, that'd be a great one to go. Right. Just read that.
And I will, it's on the list.
So Glenn, how are you picking your sources then? Because I didn't realize you were doing that long of sources. I thought it was going to kind of be more thematic, like, you know, maybe a polygamy episode and you pick, you know, 10 sources on polygamy or something that are each 5 minutes long
. I want this to be something that lasts a long time and is just a resource out there for people like me who would love to listen to an audiobook, because I'm not going to go and read John C. Bennett's History of the Saints. I want to listen to it, but nobody's doing it, so I'll do it. And it's interesting, so it'd be out there. So how am I picking them? I'm looking. I forget the name of the. Is it
Gutenberg?
Gutenberg project that is through Google, where they've got a lot of public source documents.
So the
second one that I'm going to do is one that Randy's brother suggested, Parley P. Pratt's Key to the Science of Theology.
Oh, it's precious.
And I'm really excited for it. And then there's a B.H. Roberts one that he wrote a fiction called Corianton, a Nephite Story, that was actually made into a silent film, I think, in the 1920s.
Wow.
That I saw a clip of once that was really racy for the 1920s. So I'm kind of excited to read that. So I've just got a list. I've got Mormonism Unveiled. Like the Reed Smoot hearings, like we've talked about doing Reed Smoot, the musical.
That would take like 4 years of audio, though.
Yeah, well, but
that's how long that was. It was like in real time. It was years. Like, yeah. I mean, they were doing that
in real time.
Yeah.
So we have a listener named Chris who messaged me on Facebook the other day, and he actually paid voice actors to record like 6.5 minutes of the Reed Smoot hearing.
The Reed Smoot hearings were a series of congressional hearings held between 1904 and 1907. The purpose of the hearings was to determine whether the United States should seat Senator Reed Smoot, who was elected by the Utah State Legislature in 1903. The following is an excerpt from the testimony given by Joseph F. Smith, president of the church.
What official position do you now hold in the church?
I am now the president of the church.
Is there any other description of your title than mere president?
No, sir, not that I know of.
Are you prophet, seer, and revelator?
I am so sustained and upheld by my people.
Do you get that title by reason of being president, or by reason of having been an apostle?
By reason of being president.
Are not all the apostles also prophets, seers, and revelators?
They are sustained as such at our conferences.
They all have that title now, have they not?
Well, they are so sustained at the conferences.
I want to know if they do not have that title now.
I suppose if they are sustained, they must have that title.
Are they sustained as such now?
I have said so twice, sir.
And it sounded really good. It made me think that mine was stupid.
Well, where did he release it? Is it out there? Can we listen to it or what?
I sent you the link. He put it on SoundCloud, but okay. Yeah, I don't. He was going to commission the whole thing, but it's just expensive to do.
Yeah.
So,
well, dude, give me an assignment. I'll read one for you.
Okay.
Get this shit out there, man.
Yeah.
Is there Seth Rogen type in any of these?
Yeah.
It's not easy. Like
he's going to make Parley keep Pratt into the. Yeah.
It surprised me. You know, the editing on that is is more time consuming than editing for IoT
really?
For what we're doing. Yeah, because
we don't edit anymore.
Because that's part of it. It really is. Because when I'm reading it, I'll read something and I'll say it wrong, so I'll just pause and I'll read it again.
Yeah.
And then I've got to go back and I've got like an hour and a half that I recorded, and it turns out to be a 55-minute episode because of all the things that I'm cutting and pasting. So it's a tedious process of editing, but each one's going to be like about 55 minutes to an hour, part one, part two, part three, however many parts it takes to get through the book. And I'll try to release them a week at a time, but we'll see. So yeah, that's a little side project to do. I'll do a mini-sode about it and do a launch.
You should be getting paid to do that shit, dude.
Well, I'm going to ask for donations on that one, actually.
Yes. Good.
Do a GoFundMe, because it's expensive.
I'm actually glad that you did it outside of IoT, because you already dropped $600 into it.
Yeah, Randy's right. I have put about $600 into the project already, and most of that is towards web hosting and server space for large audio files. And the way that we've approached Infants on Thrones over the past 3 years has been a lot more informal than the way that I've set up Early Mormon Audio. It simply costs more to have the kind of security in place to accept PayPal and credit card donations. So yes, I am asking for donations for Early Mormon Audio, and I'll explain what I want to do with that money in a little bit, but first, I want to elaborate a little bit more on Matt's initial question. You know, why not just publish these audiobooks through Infants on Thrones? Well, there's actually several reasons why I think this project needs to be separate. I'll just mention the two most important ones right here. First and foremost, I want these audiobooks to be accessible to believing Mormons. And I'm not sure if you guys have actually noticed this or not, but Infants on Thrones isn't exactly TBM friendly. You know, there's cussing, loud laughter, occasional evil speaking of the Lord's anointed.
I'm too sexy for wickedness, too sexy for wickedness, and there was happiness. Venus.
You know, if I mixed these audiobooks with Infants on Thrones content, I would immediately be limiting the audience to these books and limiting the potential impact that this project could have on people everywhere along the belief spectrum. You know, everyone with truth-seeking brains who want to explore these early Mormon texts in a safe, bias-free environment. Infants on Thrones is not that safe and bias-free environment. So this diverse audio library that I want to build needs to be created somewhere else. The second reason is that I really, really hope that these audiobooks will be around a lot longer than I will be, and that the voices that contribute to this project will be more diverse than just my own voice and the array of character voices that I have inside of my head at any given time. So this really comes down to technical details of things like server storage and content ownership and setting up funds that will last through time. So I actually created a sole proprietorship in the state of Indiana for Early Mormon Audio. So I have the legal registered business entity that owns all of the content and the production copyrights, and I'm paying for a dedicated server space that I hope to secure for many, many years to come. I also was really blown away by that Reed Smoot reading where you had professional voice actors doing it. I'd love to do that. I'd love to be able to hire people to add to this content and make it sound more professional, but that's going to take money. I'd also love to have a place where I can record that isn't in my house that I share with my wife and five kids. So most of the time when I do any recording, it has to be 10:30 or later at night when they're all asleep and the house is quiet, and sometimes I'm a little overbearing to them in terms of shushitude. So, you know, if there was ever a chance that I had enough money through Early Mormon Audio to be able to get an office or some kind of a small studio outside the house that I could use to record or to edit, that would be fantastic. So I'm asking for donations, and I'll be honest with you, I'm a little uncomfortable asking for donations. But, you know, after 5.5 years of doing this podcasting thing, this is the first time that I'm asking for any donations. And it's not just to go to me and the time that I put into it. Some of it is, but it's also just to go to making this project bigger and better and really fulfilling the vision that I hope that it can attain.
Because you know as well as I do, it's going to be huge.
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 we were having this conversation the other day, and John Hamer put it really, really well.
He did consecrated oil enemas.
He's got a reputation to
consecrated oil enemas? Sure.
Consecrated oil enemas, and he would lube up his catheter with consecrated oil.
He did every incredible, crazy thing that you can imagine. When people actually study Brigham Young, they're not going to just find like little tiny things about doing enemas.
Maybe I want to read this book. So, I'm intrigued. Yeah. I think I'm going to start reading this.
It's something we definitely need to be doing as a major long-term program, which is that people should be finding out about Brigham Young and John Taylor and the church going forward, because all the different, you know, like apologetics and bending over backwards that they do about for Joseph Smith,
right?
They're even less able to do it for Brigham Young because the data is just so much more. I mean, we're
overwhelming.
So many more records, I mean, they published everything. We have everything, and he's such an asshole. I mean, it's an unending. I mean, it's just. I mean, everything that he does is so foul.
Right.
So, yeah. Now, of course, there's that ex-Mormon part of me that wants to shine a light on all of these foul, assholery things that Brigham Young and other early Mormon leaders said and did. But really, honestly, I'm not coming at this project with a let's tear down believers' testimony in the church agenda. I'm really not. I just know that there are things out there that I wish I knew more about, and I'm really actually too lazy to just read it. I want someone else to read it for me. So, golden rule time, right? Read unto others what you would have them read unto you. And do it without commentary, bias, or judgment, and just let the cards fall where they may. So, this is my new project, Early Mormon Audio. And Craig Keeling, the guy who's done the artwork for Infants on Thrones, he's also helping me with this project, and he's been doing an awesome job. So, thanks, Craig. And Matt and Heather and Jake and everyone else who said that you want to help me read some of these things, let's do it. Let's start with the Journal of Discourses, because, man, that thing is going to take forever. And there's a lot of ways that you can help this project out and help contribute. So go find Early Mormon Audio on Facebook and like the group. Get the word out to your family and friends. Go to the Early Mormon Audio website and fill out the survey to let me know what you think about this and give me any suggestions that you have. And then go give me that coveted 5-star rating and review on iTunes, because when I talk about the we who are working on this project, I really mean all of you who contribute to this in one way or another. So now I'm going to play for you the introductory episode of Early Mormon Audio, where I explain a little bit more about my vision and my motivation for this project. So thanks, everyone, for humoring me here. It's going to be a lot of work, but it's also going to be a lot of fun. This is Early Mormon Audio.
Early Mormon Audio.
Breathing new life into old words.
The present is an age of progress. Change.
Joseph Smith said that the bank was God.
Our Heavenly Father is more liberal in his views and
values than his counsel,
said Shidlock. If you want to understand a man, listen to his words, and then listen to the echoes around them. Hi, my name is Glenn, and I'd like to welcome you to Early Mormon Audio and tell you a little bit about myself and a little about my vision for this project. Now, to start off with, I'm a multi-generational Mormon on both sides of my family. In fact, each one of my 8 great-grandparents was born into the Mormon Church. One of my relatives was Artemus Millett, who was the architect for the Kirtland Temple. Another was Philemon C. Merrill, who was a bodyguard of Joseph Smith in Nauvoo. Mormonism has really permeated my life. I served a mission to Japan. I graduated from Brigham Young University in the mid-90s. I completed a master's and a PhD program, ABD, which means all but dissertation, at Indiana University, with a focus on Mormon history, traditional culture, and especially folklore. My master's thesis was on the Lost Tribes of Israel and the Japanese people, and my unfinished dissertation was on Mormon humor. And for the past 5 years, I've been actively involved in the world of Mormon podcasting, but a little more on that later. First, I want to share with you 2 brief stories. First, when I was in 6th grade, I sort of loved the musical Oliver Twist.
Oliver, Oliver,
Never before has a boy wanted more.
Now, I watched this all the time on our VHS. So when my sixth grade music teacher, Mrs. Draper, said that we were going to do a school musical, I begged her to do Oliver Twist. But she explained to me that that wasn't really an option. But why can't we? I asked. Well, because we can't get the script, she explained. Well, that was a stupid reason, I thought. So I went home that weekend and I popped in the VHS tape. I sat down behind my mom's typewriter. And this is like 1984 when people still use typewriters. And I typed up word for word the entire movie. I pushed pause a lot and rewind a lot, and I went through a ton of whiteout. But that tells you a little bit about my drive and maybe insanity in some of the things that I've done in my life. So that's my first story, and here's my second. So my father instilled in me at a very young age an incredibly strong curiosity and passion for early Mormon theology. Now, I remember talking with him once in my early teens. It was late one night. We were looking up at the stars, and he told me about a passage in the Doctrine and Covenants that completely changed the way that I viewed the world and my own existence in it. So I'm going to read from D&C, section 88. This is verses 51 to 61. Behold, I will liken these kingdoms unto a man having a field, and he sent forth his servants into the field to dig the field. And he said unto the first, Go ye and labor in the field, and in the first hour I will come unto you, and ye shall behold the joy of my countenance. And he said unto the second, Go ye also into the field, and in the second hour I will visit you with the joy of my countenance. And also unto the third, saying, I will visit you, and unto the fourth, and so on unto the twelfth. Therefore, unto this parable I will liken all these kingdoms and the inhabitants thereof, every kingdom in its hour, and in its time, and in its season, even according to the decree which God hath made. So as we looked up at the night sky, my dad told me that these 12 kingdoms here were actually 12 different Earth-like planets, and that our Earth was one of them, and that this section of the D&C teaches those who have ears to hear that Jesus visits each and every one of these planets and the inhabitants thereof. And my dad wasn't making this up either. He got these ideas from early Mormon sources. Now, this is what Joseph Fielding Smith said about this. During the millennium, the Savior will spend 1,000 years here, which is one day according to the Lord. In D&C section 88, it's written that the Savior will do the same thing in other worlds, visiting each in its turn. That's from Answers to Gospel Questions, chapter 3, verse 212. John Taylor said, That is, each kingdom or planet and the inhabitants thereof were blessed with the visits and presence of their Creator in their several times and seasons. That's from Mediation and Atonement, page 77. Orson Pratt, who was one of the early members of the Quorum of the Twelve, said, The Lord wanted to represent these kingdoms so that we could understand what He desired to impart, and He gave it as a parable. In order to comprehend this, let us come back to our own globe. Do we not expect that the Lord will, by and by, come and visit us and stay a little while, about 1,000 years? Yes, and then we shall be made glad for the joy of the countenance of our Lord. He will be among us, and will be our king, and he will reign as a king of kings and lord of lords. And all the people of the globe who are counted worthy to be called Zion, the pure in heart, will be made glad by the countenance of their Lord for 1,000 years during which the earth will rest. Then what? Well, he withdraws. For what? To fulfill other purposes. For he has other worlds or creations and other sons and daughters, perhaps just as good as those dwelling on this planet, and they, as well as we, will be visited, and they will be made glad with the countenance of their Lord. Thus he will go, in the time and in the season thereof, from kingdom to kingdom, or from world to world, causing the pure in heart, the Zion that is taken from these creations, to rejoice in his presence. Journal of Discourses, 17, 332 to 333. Now, we may look at this sort of thing now and refer to it as Battlestar Galactica type theology, And this sort of thing actually did inspire Glenn A. Larson, the creator of the original 1978 Battlestar Galactica. But this is the sort of thing that really captured my imagination and went a long way in forming my early sense of self and made me feel incredibly secure about my place in this big, vast universe. So, I've always had a hunger and a thirst for these early Mormon source texts. And so many of them are available now electronically on the internet, and these texts are part of the public domain. But I've got a confession to make. Modern technology has sort of ruined me. It's a little ironic, given the scope of this project, actually, but I just can't seem, under normal circumstances, to force myself to sit down and just read a book anymore. I want audio. I want podcasts or audiobooks or TV or movies. Now, I'd love to listen to some of these early Mormon texts as an audiobook, but they just don't exist in audio format. Or if they do, I haven't been able to find them. But they're in the public domain. They're not under copyright, so anybody could create these as an audiobook. So it's time once again for me to pop in my old VHS tape and sit down at the typewriter and just be the change that I want to see. Or in this case, to create the things that I want to hear. Now, for those of you who are familiar with me and my work on podcasts like Mormon Expression and Infants on Thrones, this probably won't come as much of a surprise to you. But for those of you who are meeting me for the first time through Early Mormon Audio, well, I want you to know a few things about me and about my objectives with this project. And I want to reassure you of my intentions right from the start. So first, I want this project to be about these old texts, period. So I'm not going to be making any judgments or any commentary in the weekly published content that I create. These will be multi-part audiobooks, not opinion-based podcast episodes. Second, my objective with this project is to create a diverse audio library. So there's going to be a healthy, balanced mix of what may be considered both pro- and anti-Mormon sources. I personally don't have an agenda one way or the other. I'm not interested in either building up or tearing down anyone's beliefs or faith. I'm interested in understanding better the early Mormon church through multiple lenses and perspectives. It's my heritage. I want to understand it better. Finally, and this more than anything else, I'm just incredibly driven by this strong desire to breathe new life into these old texts and to allow these words from the dust to speak for themselves. Now, there's something very exciting and humbling about making these old forgotten works more accessible for today's day and age, and for people with the mild ADD like I feel like I've got for myself. And I expect that the audience that this project builds over time will be motivated by a similar interest and passion, regardless of whether you're an active believing member of the Mormon Church, or an ex-Mormon, or a non-Mormon interested in Mormon history, or anyone in between. So this project isn't about Mormonism's truth claims at all. It's about the source material that just is so incredibly fascinating, regardless of your personal faith perspective. So just to be clear, my desire is to create content that's widely accessible and free of any external bias or commentary or judgment from me. And this is the main reason why you won't see any public comment sections on the website. There are other forums out there to discuss and to argue the particulars of these things. This project is going to be just about the texts. So let me tell you what I'm planning for basically the next 6 months. And let's call this phase one that'll start in September 2015 and probably go to March 2016. Now, the first thing that I'm going to create is an audiobook of History of the Saints, which was published in 1842 by John C. Bennett. The book is 341 pages, so I estimate that's going to take about 11 parts. The second book I want to do is Key to the Science of Theology, which was published in 1855 by Parley P. Pratt. Now, that's 173 pages, so it'll probably take 5 parts to finish. Then I want to read Corianton, A Nephite Story, which was published in 1902 by B.H. Roberts. and it's a fiction, it's a novel, and it was turned into a silent film, I think, in the 1920s. I saw a clip of it once, and it was pretty interesting. So I've always wanted to read this, but I never have. 111 pages in three parts. That's the third book that I want to tackle. The fourth is Mormonism Unveiled, which was published in 1833 by E.D. Howe. That's 290 pages and will probably be published in about eight parts. And then the fifth one is called Are We of Israel, which was published in 1931 by George Reynolds. It's pretty short, 55 pages, so it'll probably take me just two parts there. Now, as I sit and record this, I've actually completed the first three parts of John C. Bennett's History of the Saints. Each part is just under an hour, and that's basically what I expect each weekly release to be. So, based on the work that I put into this project so far, I estimate that it probably takes me about 5 to 6 hours to record, edit, and produce a single one-hour episode. So that means that in order to complete this phase one, I'll end up with about 29 to 30 hours worth of listening material, which will probably take me around 150 to 180 total hours of work, or about 5 to 6 hours a week for the next 29 to 30 weeks.
I think I better think it out again.
So that's my current goal, and anything above and beyond that will depend largely on the type of response that I get from you as listeners. But beyond phase one, there are other books and journals and novels that I'm really hoping to tackle. So just a few on my list. William Clayton's Journal, Among the Mormons, The Journal of Discourses, which is massive but is so fascinating, Lectures on Faith, The Seer, which is actually one of the first books that I ever got from my dad and just has so many interesting things in it, and The Reed Smoot Hearings, fascinating. And there are others, and I hope to get suggestions from you listeners as we go forward. I'm also very open to support and contributions of any kind. In fact, I really want to encourage that. Now, monetary donations through the website or through GoFundMe initiatives will definitely help, and those are probably the simplest way that you could contribute and help. And if I raise enough money, I could possibly hire voice actors to record more material or other audio editors to help edit, and I can speed up the production of these multi-part audiobooks. Now, that would be ideal, and that would be fantastic, but some of you listeners may even want to try your own hand at recording some of these books or chapters in these books, and I'm completely open to that as well. I'm really excited for all the potential with this project, and I definitely want to create a large and diverse audio library. So, thank you for your interest, and thank you for your support. It's going to be a fascinating experience. It's going to be a lot of work, but it's also going to be a lot of fun. So if you believe in this project and you'd like to help me out, please go to the donation page on earlymormonaudio.com and make a small donation, or a large one. I really won't mind. And if you'd like to contact me for any reason, go to the contact page and send me an email through the website. I'd love to hear from you. So thanks again. And now, if you don't mind, I've got a bit of work to do. Thank you for listening to Early Mormon Audio, where we hope to create a diverse audio library, bringing back to life many of these old, forgotten Mormon-themed texts. If you appreciate the time and effort it takes to make this audio available, please consider a donation at our website, earlymormonaudio.com, to keep this project growing. Recommend us to a friend and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Your continued support and patronage is very much appreciated. Early Mormon Audio logo and artwork designed by Craig Keeling. Follow Craig's work at craigkeeling.com. This has been a production of Early Mormon Audio. Narration and production copyright 2015 by Glenn Ostlund.
Wait a minute. You're still here? You're still listening? All right. Well, for those of you who are, would you like to hear a little bit of the first part of John C. Bennett's History of the Saints? You do? Well, heck, why not give you another little taste? before I just abruptly end this thing and force you to go over to the other website to listen to the rest of it. Huh? That's how all the drug dealers do it in our kids' schools, right? Here you go, you gluttons for punishment, you.
John C. Bennett is a fascinating character in Mormon history. A convert to Mormonism in the early 1840s, he played a key role in passing the Nauvoo City Charter and quickly rose to a position of authority. He was the first mayor of Nauvoo from February 1, 1841 to May 17, 1842. During this brief time, he also served as assistant president of the church, as major general of the Nauvoo Legion, and as chancellor of the University of Nauvoo. Bennett was excommunicated from the church on May 11, 1842. Rumors of adultery, homosexuality, and unauthorized polygamy had emerged. Soon after his excommunication, he wrote a scathing exposé entitled History of the Saints, or An Exposé of Joe Smith and Mormonism. After Joseph Smith's martyrdom in June 1844, Bennett surprised many by returning to Nauvoo and at first aligning himself with Sidney Rigdon and then with James Strang, two of several Mormon leaders contending for leadership of the LDS Church. Beginning as early as 1835, Bennett was an early champion for the health benefits of the tomato, was a pioneer in the use of chloroform as an anesthetic, and was the creator of several breeds of chicken, including Plymouth Rock Fowl, which he exhibited in Boston in 1849. Bennett died August 5, 1867, at the age of 63 in Polk City, Iowa. Part one of this audio will take you through John C. Bennett's own introduction and his explanation for his conversion to Mormonism, and will include selected excerpts from his subsequent lengthy section on the character of the author. Part one will take you through the alleged controversy surrounding Bennett's excommunication from the Mormon Church. This abridged reading covers up to page 41 of Bennett's original book. Part two will pick up from there. Note by the publisher. In offering the following work to the public, we think it not improper to make a few observations respecting the author and our connection with him. We became aware through the medium of newspapers that General Bennett was about to publish a work containing his disclosures respecting Joe Smith and the Mormons. Meeting him in New York and being satisfied from our intercourse with him that he deserved our confidence, we made arrangements with him to publish the book he was preparing. During its preparation and passage through the press, we've been almost constantly in his society and have seen him for a long time under a variety of circumstances. The result of our observations has been that we place the most implicit reliance upon his veracity and are perfectly convinced that he is a gentleman of strict honor and of very considerable acquirements and information. In regard to the statements he has made in the following pages, we cannot, of course, say anything upon our personal knowledge, but we know from our own inspection that the documents, affidavits, and certificates he has inserted therein are genuine. And most of the letters, at least those of a recent date, came through the post office into our hands and were by us given to General Bennett, who invariably submitted them to our inspection. We can also state that we have seen numerous letters from Nauvoo, written by respectable persons, who, we have learned from the public papers, reside at Nauvoo and who state things which corroborate in all particulars the disclosures of General Bennett. Our motive in publishing this work is to let the public be informed of the true character of these pretended Mormon saints, which we firmly and conscientiously believe to be truly set forth in General Bennett's work, and in colors not heightened or exaggerated. As a true exposition, therefore, of Mormon faith and practice, we commend it to the serious and impartial attention of the public. Emerson Leland and Willard J. Whiting. The History of the Saints, or An Exposé of Joe Smith and Mormonism, by John C. Bennett. Boston, Leland and Whiting, 1842. Preface. I have been induced to prepare and publish the following work by a desire to expose the enormous iniquities that have been perpetrated by one of the grossest and most infamous impostors that ever appeared upon the face of the earth, and by many of his minions under the name and garb of religion, and professedly by the direct will and command of Almighty God.
My facilities for doing what I have undertaken are as great as could possibly be desired. For 18 months, I was living with the Mormons at their chief city and possessed the confidence of the prophet himself and of his counselors. I was indeed from an early period one of their first presidents, who, after the prophet, are the rulers of the church. This gave me access to all their secret lodges and societies and enabled me to become perfectly familiar with the doings and designs of the whole church. This book contains a full and accurate account of my motives for joining them and of the discoveries which I made among them, illustrated and confirmed by a variety of documents, both public and private. I have not, I can fearlessly assert, exaggerated the facts I have here presented to the world, though I have, as they richly deserve, shown them up with an unsparing hand. I've been obliged to insert much personal matter and many testimonials respecting myself, in consequence of the violent and scurrilous attacks made upon me through the public papers by the impostor and his emissaries. This, I trust, the reader will not impute to egotism, but to its real cause. A desire to strengthen my statements against the opposition which I'm certain they will encounter. In conclusion, I would commend to the candid and earnest attention of every patriotic and religious person the statement I have made, and with the assurance that I have told the truth and nothing but the truth, though by no means the whole truth, entreat them to use all their influence and exertions to arrest and quell the Mormon monster in his career of imposture, iniquity, and treason. The haste with which I have necessarily written my book will be my apology to the critics for its defects of style and arrangement. I have been more solicitous about the matter than the manner of it. Reasons for joining the Mormons. It is, of course, necessary for me to give some explanation of the reasons which led me to join the Mormons, and of my motives for remaining so long in connection with them. I'm happy to have it in my power to do this easily and satisfactorily. I find that it's almost universally the opinion of those who've heard of me in the eastern part of the United States that I united myself to the Mormons from a conviction of the truth of their doctrines, and that I was, at least for some time, a convert to their pretended religion. This, however, is a very gross error. This is, and indeed was, from the very first, well known to my friends and acquaintances in the Western country, who were well aware of my reasons for connecting myself with the Prophet, which reasons I will now proceed to state. My attention had long turned towards the movements and designs of the Mormons, with whom I had become pretty well acquainted years before in the state of Ohio, and after the formation of their establishment at Nauvoo in 1839, the facts and reports respecting them, which I continually heard, led me to suspect, and indeed believe, that their leaders had formed and were preparing to execute a daring and colossal scheme of rebellion and usurpation throughout the northwestern states of the Union. It was to me evident that temporal as well as spiritual empire was the aim and expectation of the Prophet and his cabinet. The documents that will hereafter be introduced will clearly show the existence of a vast and deep-laid scheme upon their parts for conquering the states of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Missouri, and of erecting upon the ruin of their present governments a despotic military and religious empire, the head of which, as emperor and pope, was to be Joseph Smith, the prophet of the Lord, and his ministers and viceroys, the apostles, high priests, elders, and bishops of the Mormon Church. The fruition of this hopeful project would, of course, have been preceded by blunder, devastation, and bloodshed, and by all the countless horrors which invariably accompany civil war. American citizens could not be expected to stand quietly by and suffer their governments to be overthrown, their religion subverted, their wives and children converted into instruments for a despot's lust and ambition, and their property forcibly appropriated to the use and furtherance of a base imposture. The Mormons would, of course, meet with resistance as soon as their intentions became evident, and so great was already their power, and so rapidly did their numbers increase, that the most frightful consequences might naturally be expected to ensue from an armed collision between them and the citizens who still remained faithful to the God and the laws of their fathers. These reflections continually occurred to me, as I observed the proceedings of the Mormons and, at length, determined me to make an attempt to detect and expose the movers and machinery of the plot. I perceived that it would be useless to undertake this by open opposition. So great and complete was the control that the prophet had established over the souls of his followers that very little of his vile proceedings could be made known from the confessions or testimonies of his subordinates. Even if one or two did testify to any particular acts of wickedness, such were the address and influence of Smith that he would, without difficulty, bring forward any required number of witnesses who would perjure themselves in direct contradiction of his adversaries. It at length occurred to me that the surest and speediest way to overthrow the impostor and expose his iniquity to the world would be to profess myself a convert to his doctrines and join him at the seat of his dominion. I felt confident that from my standing in society and the offices I held in the state of Illinois, I should be received by the Mormons with open arms, and that the course I was resolved to pursue would enable me to get behind the curtain and behold at my leisure the secret wires of the fabric, and likewise those who moved them. I was quite aware of the danger I ran, should I be suspected or detected by the Mormons, and I also anticipated the probability of being received by many of my fellow citizens with disbelief when the time came to throw off the mask and proclaim to the world the discoveries I felt certain I should make. But none of these things deterred me. Impelled by a determination to save my country and countrymen from the evils which menaced them through the machinations of the prophet, I was rendered insensible to the risk I incurred. There was, it was evident, no other way of thwarting the impostor and his minions, and the plan I proposed to myself could not possibly, so far as I could foresee, fail of complete success. I found in history a distinguished example, a somewhat parallel case, that in which Napoleon, for the furtherance of the views of the French government upon Egypt in the East, had nominally adopted the Muslim creed. The following is the passage in his life to which I refer. Bonaparte entertained the strange idea of persuading the Muslims that he himself pertained in some sort to their religion, being an envoy of the deity sent on earth not to take away but to confirm and complete the doctrines of the Quran and the mission of Muhammad. He used in executing this purpose the inflated language of the East, the more easily that it corresponded in its allegorical and amplified style with his own natural tone of composition, and he hesitated not to join in the external ceremonial of the Muhammadan religion, that his actions might seem to confirm his words. The French general celebrated the feast of the prophet as it recurred with some sheikh of eminence and joined in the litanies and worship enjoyed by the Quran. He affected, too, the language of an inspired follower of the faith of Mecca, of which the following is a curious example. On entering the sepulchre chamber in the pyramid of Cheopa, "Glory be to Allah," said Bonaparte, "there is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet," a confession of faith which in itself is a declaration of Islamism. "Thou hast spoken like the most learned of the prophets," said the mufti who accompanied him. "I can command a car of fire to descend from heaven," continued the French general, "and I can guide and direct its course upon the earth." "Thou art the great chief to whom Muhammad gives power and victory," said the mufti. Napoleon closed the conversation with this not very pertinent Oriental proverb: "The bread which the wicked seizes upon by force shall be turned to dust in his mouth." Life of Napoleon Bonaparte, Volume 1, page 416. The motives which led Napoleon to profess Mohammedanism were undoubtedly a desire to advance the interests of his country and to facilitate the operations of the army he commanded. But if these motives justified him in the course he pursued, how much more had I to justify me in a similar line of conduct? His temporary profession of a false religion was by no means absolutely necessary under the circumstances, while, as I before observed, mine was indispensable to the end I had in view. And how much superior was my object to his? He merely wished to promote the ambitious views of his government. I, on the contrary, was endeavoring to save my country from the most dreadful evils, civil war, despotism, and the establishment of a false and persecuting religion. But how, inquires some cautious reader, were you, as an honest man, justified in taking such a course? What confidence can I place in your statements when I know by your own confession that you have once played the part of a hypocrite? These suspicions are very natural, and from the first I expected to incur them, but I think that a very little consideration of the extraordinary nature of my case will convince any candid person of the propriety and indeed necessity of the course of action I pursued. Suppose for a moment, my dear reader, that you were located on our western frontier in the vicinity of a large, powerful, and increasing tribe of savage Indians. Suppose it is apparent from their movements that they intend evil to the whites, your countrymen, that they are meditating murder, plunder, and devastation, and all the horrors that invariably attend an Indian war. Suppose that by going to them and professing to be their friend, you knew that you would be received by them freely and admitted into their councils, and could, by the intelligence you would thus gain, be enabled to frustrate their plans and avert from your country the evils and dangers which these savages would otherwise bring upon it. Would you for a moment scruple to make such pretensions, especially if, as in the case of the Mormons, there were no other possible way to do what the safety of the West demanded, to expose the imposture? The fact that in joining the Mormons I was obliged to make a pretense of belief in their religion does not alter the case. That pretense was unavoidable in the part I was acting, and it should not be condemned like hypocrisy towards a Christian church. For so absurd are the doctrines of the Mormons that I regard them with no more reverence than I would the worship of Manitou or the Great Spirit of the Indians, and feel no more compunction at joining in the former than in the latter, to serve the same useful purpose. I was perfectly satisfied, even before the Mormons went from Ohio, that it was the intention of Joe Smith and those who possessed his confidence to destroy the sacred institution of Christianity and substitute, instead of its powerful restraints upon the unholy passions of the human heart, a frightfully corrupt system that would enable them to give free course to their lust, ambition, and cruelty. A system more abominable than the arch enemy of mankind himself could have invented. Persons unacquainted with the subject can scarcely imagine the baseness and turpitude of Mormon principles, and the horrid practices to which these principles give rise. When they learn how habitually the Mormons sacrifice to their brutal propensities the virtue and happiness of young and innocent females, how they cruelly persecute those who refuse to join them, and how they murder those who attempt to expose them, they will look with indulgence upon almost any means employed to thwart their villainous designs and detect and disclose their infamy. There was, I repeat it, no possible way for me to expose the enormous wickedness of the Mormon faith and conduct than to join them, profess my belief in their religion, win their confidence, and take an active part for a time in carrying out their measures. This I did, and I appeal to every reader of this book, whether, in view of the facts herein stated upon indubitable evidence, the course I took ought not to entitle me the praise rather than the censure of honorable men. Had I been actuated by selfish and dishonorable motives, I should have remained among the Mormons, for with them I possessed power, wealth, and the means to gratify every passion or desire that I might conceive. But I felt myself a humble instrument in the hands of God to expose the impostor and his minions, and to open the eyes of my countrymen to his dark and damnable designs. I have done my duty. And whatever may be thought of my motives or my conduct, I am satisfied with the approval of my own conscience, and I feel certain that I have acted rightly and...
And what? Oh, rightly and what? I gotta know. There's gaps. There's
Gab. Hello, this is Heather. I am the unofficial matriarch of the Mormon Expositor Podcast. I'm only 35. Can you be a matriarch at 35? Anyway, you can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.